It's time. We are in need to delve into the gray area, and this might be a deep, deep dive, so I'm preparing you right now. Greg Gunderson is in the studio. How are we doing, Gray?
Good, Joel. I will say, though, if you need what I have to offer, I feel for you.
He's got the red-green look going on today with all kinds of plaid going in different colors and different directions today. It's wonderful.
Oh, I'm breaking so many rules, but I'm warm and comfortable, and I don't care.
And I mentioned that off-air that you had a red-green look going on, and I mentioned this and off air, and you agreed that Red Green is just an undersold, just a comedic genius. Red Green, the show that he's Canadian based. Is it Canadian
based? Yes, and that's part of why he doesn't get circulated here, because Canadian humor is in many ways similar, but is kind of pulled back in some key ways. Not so much gross out. There's a little bit of like an English influence to it, where like wordplay, and then there's Red Green, doing his thing.
If you don't know who I'm talking about, go to YouTube or whatever, and it's pretty clean stuff. I don't remember a whole lot being where you'd be like, oh boy, I don't want my kid to see that. It's clean comedy, just redneck, duct tape, WD-40 type of comedy. It's classic. It's good stuff.
Yeah. I think everybody can appeal to it. I think the every income bracket enjoys Red Green. Every background. It's some very one size fits all humor, which usually is pretty boring and often childish. Not Red Green. He's figured it out in a way no one else has.
He is classic. I wanted to talk a lot of different subjects, but a couple we'll focus in on this morning. First of all, one that I wasn't planning on, but Kyle Cronin, I'm going to blame him, our district administrator, for leading me into this morning, because he dropped right in the middle of his weekly update this morning. He dropped that there's a school dance coming next Friday to the Shawamigan School. And I thought to myself, this is something that has translated into several generations now, the school dances, and it continues to be. It's different. I aged myself by saying I was my senior class president, and I remember watching VHS tapes and deciding who we were going to book for a band for our homecoming dance. So that's how old I am. But I think it's refreshing and awkward at the same time that we still have school dances. Your thoughts, your memories of school dances.
Oh, man. I know my listeners are sitting there thinking, like, Gray Gunderson, there's a guy who really just tore up a middle school dance.
You were in the middle of the circle? Is that where you were?
Oh, I definitely wasn't plastered to the wall, Joel. at all. So to date myself, we were there right in the upward arc of just plug in your iPod. So there was a lot less effort necessary, which was very appealing to all involved, because you could get a 500 song playlist that had been. Now, here's the fun part, though. It was always, you know, you've got teachers who, bless them, had no familiarity with that technology, which for many is kind of the first time. You know, usually teachers had a little bit of control over what got played, but that was like the very early years of, I'm gonna have to find that student who both has an iPod and my trust. Like,
yeah, the only rule, right? The only rule of the iPod is that if you play a song that's not appropriate, you are no longer on the podium. You are over here by the concession stand.
Oh, and they slipped in there, but at the same time, it happened less often than one would maybe expect, and maybe less often than happens today. But anyway, I was not I wasn't cool, Joel. Yeah. I wasn't cool. I didn't know why I wasn't cool, which I think is for many people who aren't cool, the fact that you can't figure out it has a lot to do with it. It's kind of a circular thing. It feeds into itself.
So did dances, did you fear dances? Did you try to avoid the dances, or what was your thought process when the red and white homecoming dance for Park Falls was announced or whatever it was?
Well, like high school homecoming was a little bit different, because that was more, I mean, it was more kind of formalized. And actually, I don't remember if we had much of homecoming as a dance. You know, prom was kind of the only dance that happened for us in high school. But I feel like there were efforts to kind of have a dance in homecoming that I don't think I had in high school. So homecoming was never really much, having gone to St. A's especially.
Right.
But the middle school dance,
those are awkward.
That just I think I've probably said enough. If I don't want to embarrass myself more, it's just I couldn't figure out why. It was kind of like a Disney moment. Like my version of uncool was this weird belief that, you know, in movies, cool stuff happens at dances. The nerd gets some form of justice or gets to be happy, you know? So it's like there's kind of this enchanting idea that, like, hey, maybe I will do better socially if I go to this. Yes. And that is never what happened, because just being there was not enough. I kind of want to go back and shake my 12-year-old self, like, hey, you can't just stand there in the cafeteria of St. Anthony's looking at people. Matter of fact, that's a really bad strategy. That's worse than not being there, is what I would tell myself.
I think most people listening are with you. The awkwardness of the dances, and we had a lot of them when I was in grade school, high school. There was probably four or five a year, because it was pre-everything. It was pre-internet, pre-anything. It was just something for the parents to dump their kids off at for a couple hours and have them be supervised. But it was for those who had a girlfriend or had someone they had a crush on, it was opportunity time. Dances were opportunity time to get to dance with that girl or boy and hold hands. It was all acceptable.
Oh yeah.
But if you were on the other side where you just kind of went out and hung out with your friends, there is definitely an awkwardness to it. I can feel the awkwardness right now at the age of 58 of those dances.
Still pouring off me, isn't it?
Yes, but we're still doing it. We're still doing the dances, which is probably good. I don't know. I think it is good to be in forced social settings, because that's what life is, really. We are thrown into a lot of forced social settings that maybe we don't want to be, but we should be, I guess, or have to be.
I had kind of a pet theory for a while that I think there's a lot of value to those accidental interactions. Mm-hmm. It's nothing that I think has been or really could be studied well, but it's something that has kind of vanished now that we can communicate so efficiently with the internet and with texting. You end up bumping into fewer people. And it's I think that's not necessarily something we're prepared for. It's just kind of an accidental side effect of the internet and technology. But I wouldn't change my experience. I wish I had done it completely differently, but who knows where I would be today if I had done it differently back then. Do I regret things? Oh yeah, that was not rock bottom for me. I kept getting uncool. Like, I had a brief period in eighth grade.
I kept getting uncool.
Yeah, it got worse. There was kind of a brief period I identify specifically in eighth grade where I had an opportunity. I was doing kind of well for a minute, and then I totally fumbled that ball and just like, nope, we're gonna dive. If you're gonna fall, you might as well dive. And dive I did. Didn't recover that one until early 20s. That was a mess. It started at the dances, Joel. That's what
school dances, parents have to be sympathetic and encouraging and all kinds of different words and adjectives when it comes to their kids in school dances. I mean, if you've got a kid that just is, constantly just dreading wanting to go to the dance, I mean, at some point as a parent, maybe you just say, you know what, you don't have to go if you don't want to. Why put your kid through that? But I think encouraging them to just go be a part of that is probably a way to start anyway.
Yeah. Well, for my parents, we lived out by Pike Lake. Dad's still living there. I'm out there now. So it was a bit of a drive, but I don't remember ever really having to ask more than the first time, like, hey, can I go to a dance this weekend? I never begged. So, like, shout out to my parents for making it possible, living that far away, because, they drive you in. The dance starts at 6. It's 3 hours long. It ends at 9. And so they go home. They get home at 6:30. They sit there for 2 hours. It's 8:30. They spin right back around. Mm-hmm. And when you drive half an hour, sit for 2 hours, drive for half an hour again, that sitting for 2 hours feels like you're wasting so much time. So, like, I really appreciate that they made that possible for me. And again, I wouldn't trade the experience. I think I liken it to having my name. People ask, what was it like growing up with the name Gray? I tell them two things. I wouldn't do it again, but I also wouldn't change it because I,
no, it's like, a good name. I like it.
Yeah, like I said, who knows where I would be? Because all the stuff that I regret still led to me making radio with you in my hometown, and that's really cool. I don't know if the dances can be credited very much for that part of it, but hey, it's part of the process, I guess.
School dances, the tradition continues. One thing that's not continuing, and I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. We're going to do a part two of the gray area, all in one segment here.
All right.
I just want to say that I miss mail. I miss mail.
You miss snail mail, paper mail.
I miss mail. Yes.
Is it the actual? Do you miss the letters, or do you miss the entrapment? You know, the walk to the mailbox with the dog. The excitement of what might be here. I kind of doubt it's the A4 paper neatly folded.
No, you're right, because it probably goes back, because I remember very clearly, like on a Saturday, the mail would come at noon or whatever it would be, and I would announce that I'm going to go up the driveway and get the mail, which was probably like an eighth of a mile or a little ways up the driveway. You know, and I had older brothers, so I would get halfway up there, and then my brother would decide he's going to sprint and out and just beat me to the mailbox.
That sounds like a brother.
But there's emotions involved with the mail more than anything else, and the mail's going to go away here eventually, because the only thing that comes in the mail for most people now is credit card offers and AARP, for me anyway, applications. And that's about it. Everything else we can do online, the bills and all that stuff. I don't know why, and I was thinking about that. Why do I miss it, that physical mail, when maybe it's more because I get the mail probably 500 times a day every time I open up my phone and I open up my email. So that's getting mail too, right? But a different way of getting mail. There's a link there, probably emotionally for a lot of people, and the excitement of a birthday card coming in the mail from grandma, because you know there's a $5 check in there or something. That emotional link is big, I think.
I think so. And on top of it, I think the moving that to the phone is like one of the worst things you can do for that kind of thing, because getting the mail, you don't necessarily seek happiness when you do that. You're probably going to find some bills, but you accidentally stumble upon those cards and hey, my birthday's coming up and this card got here a day early. How cool is that? You know, there's those little accidents. Whereas on the phone, whipping open the email for the eighth time today is more like a desperate attempt, hoping that the god of the phone will please you in that moment.
Exactly.
And it never works, ever. Like, we've gone from accidentally finding happiness to seeking it desperately where it doesn't exist, all for the same process, receiving a delivery of information. And I think we've got to adapt to that. I think we need to take steps to improve our relationship with technology. What does that mean? I have no idea, but I'm pretty sure we need it.
It's like walking to the mailbox 500 times a day. It really is. It's like obsessively every day, not knowing when the mail is going to come or what's going to be in it in the physical mailbox. And like every day, like every minute, just like walking outside, open up the mailbox. Oh, it's not here yet. Oh, it's not here yet.
It's worse.
It's not here yet.
It's like you're teleporting. You're not even getting to enjoy the walk, and there's no dog. Like, you're just zip, mailbox, and you're not even like opening the box. It's just looking and zip. Back, like you're like the lazy superhero washed up on episode one of the series of the redemption arc of
and for most people, if it's not in one mailbox, then we check the other one, because a lot of us have work emails and we have personal emails. So just like, well, there's nothing there, but let me check this other email box.
Oh, we're in a very unique sweet spot right now. Like, when I was in high school, I had to make many email addresses because I kept losing passwords, or I'd realize after I made the email inbox that I had a typo in my email address. It's like, oh, not using that. But at the same time, Google has done a really good job alerting me to the fact that these inboxes still exist. So I think I'm juggling like 7 or 8 inboxes. But it's really useful, because I sign up for weird stuff sometimes. Like, this seems like it might get me a lot of spam. Okay, junk email inbox, for sure. Like, I've got accounts with my junk email. If I open my third email inbox, like, there's nothing desperately weird in there, but it's all the stuff that I don't want to deal with, next to the emails from Auntie Joe and the pictures of the family reunion. You know?
See, I don't know if I'm going to still be around on this planet when it happens, but I'm curious of what the transition will be from USPS mail to whatever it is, because it still needs to be there in a certain form, obviously, with packages and certain documents that need to be delivered. But will it be privatized? Will someone find a way to be able to make money off it, because if it goes away from a government service, which loses billions of dollars, and goes to a private service, somebody's got to be able to turn a profit on it somehow. So how's that transition? What's that going to look like?
Wait, see, that's the thing. That speaking of it in those terms, I don't think necessarily is the right... I don't want to call it the wrong way of thinking, because I detest that phrase. But at the same time, it's not meant to be a profit-generating machine. It's a service. It is quite literally something that makes life in the country better because the delivery of information is reliable. And it provides jobs to those who complete the service.
Right.
So, like, it's the idea that the post office loses money. Yeah. Yes. Yes, it does. And it should. And that's how it's always worked. And if we want that federally sponsored and ran delivery of information, that's what it looks like if you're using paper, you know? So yeah, what is, maybe there's like a United States digital postal service.
Well, Amazon already has delivery trucks in big cities all around the country. So that's a logical transition would be to something like Amazon, where, I mean, but the cost of sending a simple letter in the mail would probably escalate pretty rapidly.
I have no doubt that's what's going to happen, is somebody will end up with a big fat contract, and it will be someone who doesn't need the money, my expectation.
And your local post offices could just all of a sudden have an Amazon sign out in front instead of a post office, because you would think a company like that would still use that infrastructure somehow to make the transition. I don't know.
I would like to think that. I'm less and less certain that kind of thing would be the case. Until I see evidence of that, I have no reason to believe that there wouldn't be some. We're looking at changes the likes of which we've never seen, for better or for worse. No, I'm not qualified to even share an opinion on what I think of them. But there's very clearly things that have never been touched are getting touched. You know, like Civil Rights Acts from 1965, for example. Gone as of yesterday. So, like, there's things that have been viewed as sacred by people who disagree with each other, agreed on these things. Okay, there's institutions that are being dismantled. What does that mean? I have no idea. But I mean, like, the post office might be the perfect example. There's got to be a plan for replacing it, though. There's critical aspects of that service. So
I wonder if am I the only one? I mean, we'll go a week or 10 days with getting absolutely nothing that doesn't automatically get ripped in half and put in the recycling bin.
Generally, yeah.
I mean, we'll go that long of a span. So the transition has to happen. The transition from cell phones to landlines being gone is a slow transition, but less and less landlines. And now there's even some parts of the country where phone companies, they won't even put a landline in. They've just eliminated the service totally. So the transition will happen someday. It's just a matter of what it's going to be, because right now it's still a necessary service as far as some of the things that the post office does. And they do a great job. I love American mail carriers. Everybody does a great job. I'm not bashing on the post office, but it's just a natural transition of technology that is eventually going to happen. I'm just very interested to know what it's going to be.
My main question is, what'll be the relationship between that technology and physical addresses? Will it be tied to land the same way that a mailbox has to be? You know, do you have a mailing address the same way, or is it based on your phone's location, for example? Are you going to share your location? Like, is this going to make it way easier for people without a physical address to get mail, because they just, all right, this person's phone is, it's going to be dropped off like a DoorDash order? You know, here's the physical location provided by the device that requested this delivery. Okay, cool. I don't even need an address. I'm just going to, my phone will GPS me to that point. Here's the most efficient route through New York City to that street corner. Who cares if it's a vacant lot? So, like, there's some really neat aspects of it that are it not even existing yet. Like, I'm with you. Like, what is the plan?
Yeah. And the fact that there is now more internet service in more parts of the country due a lot to the pandemic, that is a natural transition too, because even up here, we had areas, people that did not have internet, that it transitioned into having access because of school issues, because of having to do the schooling through online with the pandemic. So that once we have basically internet available and cell phone service available nationwide, then that transition would even be more likely, because you don't need to physically deliver the credit card application. It's all coming through, you know, through email and through whatever else it might be. So
I'd want to do a lot of research, but I feel like I just saw some sort of decision that the internet will not be considered a utility, though. So that would I would consider that a barrier to access to internet in the way that it would need to be for that to be the case. You know, it strikes me as possible. But, you know, that's just not where the profit machines have been pointed. And so that's not where they'll be pointed until that is where the profit is.
We're already to a point where you don't even need to get a bill in the mail. You can pay your energy bill online automatically. You can pay your phone bill online automatically. I mean, my life is to the point where I think I have one bill that I actually go in and pay every month, and I do it through the phone. But I mean, it's set up now in our world already where you don't even need to get a bill. It's just boom, boom, automatic payment, ACH, it's gone. It's already there.
Yep. I've actually got it set up so that specifically bills all are set to auto pay, but I don't like not seeing them. I like seeing, I'm making sure that I like having my human eyes on the process.
You're still a little bit old school, Greg.
Well, so what I've set up is my email inbox will automatically sort and save the email notifications that those bills have come in. And I've set it so that I only get notifications for those emails. So I'll get, like, most of my emails don't bother me. I've made it so that's the case, except for bill emails. And I'll look and say, okay, that $50 bill was $50 again this month. I'll swipe that to the right. It vanishes from my life forever until next month when I check again. And it's a 3-second process. And I've got it to where I can verify the amount without intruding on my day. But still, that said, Rachel and I are still talking about, like, hey, let's improve our relationship with money. Like that Work Money Minute from Carrie Joy. Just like, I love how she said it. If you don't set a time to think about money specifically, you will be thinking about money at all times. And I think she said that perfectly, because that's me. I'm sitting here thinking about money right now. But we're getting better.
The joy of a walk to the mailbox. It's still there, even though I know that that I'm going to open it up and it's just going to be right in the recycle bin most of the time. There's still an emotional link and a joy for me. The younger generation, they probably don't even know where the mailbox is.
Yeah, well, nowadays people think that the government just thinks their second name is current resident, I think. Like, it's all junk.
Yeah.
It's all junk. Like, current resident, just nope. Welcome to the shredder.
Exactly.
Straight to it.
There you go. A double dip into the gray area. A cool one on this cold Thursday morning. Thank you, Gray. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. The gray area randomly on the morning show throughout the week.